Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, Anna Yeager, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between rural and urban America. If you pay attention at all to this program, you know that I like to continue to focus on people that seek alternative marketing routes to get closer to the consumer. We have had this reset button that has hit us, particularly from a food production standpoint. But something that I myself have not spent nearly enough time on, and we are going to fix that here and now with Anna Yeager coming to us from, is it Yeager? Am I saying Yeager right?
You are. You are saying it right.
From Northwest Alabama. Anna, Redland, Cotton co-owner, along with your father, welcome to the program.
I'm so happy to be here.
Where'd you grow up? You did not grow up in Alabama.
I did grow up in Alabama until we moved to the big city for school. I grew up almost smack dab in the middle of a cotton field in Moulton, Alabama. And my dad's been growing cotton since before we were born. So that's been a part of me for a long time.
So I always pride myself in being able to just listen to people and tell them pretty close to where they were born and grew up and spent most of their life. I lost you in a bet. I mean, if you'd have told me I grew up in Alabama, I said, no, you did not. You grew up in Southwest Missouri and you moved to Alabama.
A fun fact about me, I got my degree at Auburn University in graphic design, and I moved to New York City and worked there for a couple of years.
You're just trying to suck up to say, Trent, you're hearing the blend of my accent. Go ahead, go on.
You're hearing the blend. my dad is forever embarrassed that my true Southern accent is missing.
But at least your dad's got to be proud. You went to the ag school in Alabama.
Yes. He was a little reluctant at first, but he's a convert now.
You mean he wasn't an Auburn fan?
No, he was hardcore Alabama. He took me to the football games. He wanted me to go to Alabama so bad, and that just wasn't for me.
Wow.
I needed to go to the Cal College.
Yeah. Yeah, what a great agricultural program at Auburn, and it doesn't get a lot of attention.
Yes.
So, hey, how's that graphic design degree working for you?
You know what? I use it every single day.
I'll bet you
because
do.
From running the website to doing the advertising to all the printed materials, the packaging, I use it every day, but not in the way that I thought I would.
So take us through your life in the cotton field. What's been going on in the cotton business? About the extent of what I know is that we grow cotton, we send cotton and wool to China. 87% of all textiles produced in China, and we get clothing back. What's going on in your world of the cotton?
It's interesting right now, and it has been for quite some time. We got into this business around 2016 is when we started Redland Cotton, started producing textiles out of our cotton 100% domestically. And when we started that, there were maybe three or four mills that had looms large enough to weave fabric wide enough to make a bed sheet. And now I think there's two. And that's, between 2016 and 2020. The spinning capacity for yarn is very minimal here. There's only two finishers here that are even set up and capable to run cloth wide enough to make a bed sheet. So the textile industry in America over the past decades, past several decades, and my dad always felt like that was part of the reason why he was getting such a low cost for his cotton that he's been producing. China has been historically holding cotton over the cotton market to drive down the cost. They have, like you stated in the beginning, a large majority of the textile manufacturing capacity. And my dad always felt like he was getting screwed. I'm sure a lot of farmers do. Mm-hmm. So when we had this idea to, you know, bring our raw product to the consumer, we thought it was absolutely necessary to make it here. And that has been a true headache from the point that we started to now, because got the news today that our yarn spinner is going to be down for another 3 weeks just due to lack of business. They don't have it. And
that's obviously due to COVID-19 and what's taking place.
It's due to COVID, for sure. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's the supply chain is so fragile, and the options are so limited here.
The infrastructure just isn't in place.
It's not. It's not, and it was really interesting when the lack of PPE became apparent, and you know, local and state governments were trying to, you know, find cut and sew, find fabric, find find people to make masks and gowns and et cetera, and it's not there. And even if they found it there, they aren't going to be happy with the price that they're paying. And to me, that was just, I was just observing it happening. That was a huge wake up call. Like, you haven't wanted it here for years and years. Where did you think it was going to come from?
Right.
Do you sense, that was amazing to me.
Okay, let's go pre-March 1, because everything after March 1 is just the new norm, whatever that is, okay? But pre-March 1.
Yeah, right.
In fact, March 7th, I was on a panel discussion in Connecticut talking about bringing back renewable fibers, in particular wool, because there's only one textile mill in the United States. It's in South Carolina. We don't have the infrastructure. We need to build this infrastructure back. Why are we relying on other countries for our fibers? Did you sense much of that taking place pre-March 1?
A very small community that, you know, is hanging on by a thread, literally, trying to push that. But, you know, it's not as sexy and necessary sounding as steel manufacturing, or even medical, like your medicines and stuff like that. I think textiles just seem less necessary, less essential.
Because y'all don't wear clothing in Alabama?
Exactly. Well, wow. I say it a little ironically. I just think that overall, as a society and, you know, leaders looking at supply chains, I think that textiles got overlooked largely.
Right. Yeah. When did it start eroding, by the way? When did textile mills close down and relocate to Asia?
It seems like late 80s, early 90s seemed to be the
big... You can convince me of that.
The big suck.
Right.
Yeah.
And largely precipitated by labor availability and regulations. True?
I would say so. Regulations driving up the cost to do your business. Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
I mean, it just,
I'm sure
it stands.
I'm
to
sure
reason.
You know, as the economy reacted. I mean, I'm sure that labor unions play a role too in, you know, requesting higher wages, which they should have been paid. But when you're competing with, you know, other nations that don't have those unions and those needs and requirements, it's absolutely impossible to compete.
Anna Yeager, my guest, we've already completed our first segment, Redland Cotton, coming to us from Northwest Alabama. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more Rural Route right after this. And right out of the gate today, I want to remind you about the Forrest Films movies that are now on Netflix. Obviously, I'm passionate about The Stand. I was involved in the story itself because it is inspired by a true story. It's not a true account of exactly what happened, but it is inspired by a true story. And this true story, by the way, is happening every single day somewhere in the United States to a landowner, to an animal owner, and we need to out it. That means let everybody know what's going on. The movie I'm referring to, The Stand at Paxton County, is now available on Netflix, along with three other Forrest Films presentations and movies that I suggest you watch. Bennett's War, Roped, and Lady Driver. All four of these are tremendous Forrest Films movies. They're on Netflix. The Stand at Paxton County. Maybe save the best for last. I don't know. Welcome back to Rural Route. Trent Luce, Andy Yeager, my guest, Redland Cotton, Northwest Alabama. Landry and I just traveled through Alabama. We had met a friend for lunch in Birmingham, drove up through Coleman, Alabama, missed Eddie Levert. Don't know why I missed him. Didn't know you were there. We would have found you. Actually, by the time we left Birmingham, Anna, we had one thing on our mind.
What?
Hazard, Nebraska. How quick can we get home?
So, you didn't enjoy your stay in Alabama?
We did enjoy our stay. It's just that it was on the last leg of the journey. We were on a pig run. We delivered pigs
to
Pennsylvania and dropped down to Atlanta, then over to Birmingham. The last pig drop was Louisville, and then we headed home.
Gotcha.
But you asked me during the break, and I said we don't talk about the topic during the break. No, Nebraska raises no cotton. But I will tell you that I have friends in the southern third of Kansas that have moved back into cotton because cotton was not part of their farming profile for many years. There's a new gin that went up around Pratt, Kansas. And Jerry DeWeese, one of my dear friends, told me just last fall that had it not been for cotton, don't know if he'd still be farming. So cotton's creeping into our country.
Well, good. Good. I mean, if it grows, my dad always says it's his favorite crop because it has character. It's a very resistant.
Has your father raised pigs? If he likes character, I believe he would really get into raising pigs. They got plenty of character.
We have about 250 cow-calf pairs on our farm, so that's the livestock of choice at the moment.
Well, you could diversify that. I could fix that. I could come back to Alabama tomorrow.
I'll connect you with my dad and my brothers.
Put you in the business. What's the toughest part? I think you already told us just the infrastructure. But beyond that little spinning wheel situation you had, the toughest part of holding this together, and I can't say from farm to fork, but from farm to bed sheet. Is that a fair analogy?
Right. I would say that's fair. And you're asking what the most difficult part is?
Right. Because I'm assuming it's not the marketing aspect. Once you have the finished product, you can probably market it easy, huh?
Yeah. I would say for us is, and that's kind of been a little pickle for us this year, is, you know, we harvest our crop in around October, November. And, you know, for the past 4 years, we've been making a guess at what we are going to sell in the year to come because the whole supply chain takes about 6 to 8 months from, you know, getting the raw fiber to your final finished textile. So that planning and anticipation of growth and how much you're going to do starts so early, and it's not like you can go back and get more of your own cotton, really. So I would say that's probably the most challenging for us. And you know, in March and April, when this reset button, as you say, kind of clicked. I think it's clicked for a lot of Americans, and they're searching for that American-made goods. And so, thankfully, I've done my due diligence, and we show up on Google, and that's put a demand on our product, which is great. And I'm super happy about that. But obviously, we didn't predict a pandemic back in November of last year. So, so that's something that we're trying to work on now, is just ramping up production. Obviously, mills have closed. They're starting to reopen. So if you go to our site, you're going to see that a lot of stuff is out of stock, and that's essentially why. Mm-hmm. We're making it as fast as we can, but it only goes
Anna,
so fast.
Do you work with neighboring cotton farmers, or is this all your product?
Right now, it's all our product. And with our own capacity, so my dad farms about 3,000, 4,000 acres of cotton every year. And we have our own cotton gin, and he produces about 7,000 bales. I believe that's correct. And right now we're using maybe 500.
So it's not a long way to go. It's still a small percentage of your overall product.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And that just goes to show like how much hundreds of thousands of yards can come from just a few hundred bales.
So I guess back to my question at the beginning, which maybe wasn't poignant enough. Why only 10% is going through your own marketing channels? Is it the same answer that we keep coming back to, the infrastructure in the middle to get the cotton to a finished product?
Yes, it's infrastructure. And, I mean, it's our own infrastructure, too. We're a pretty small company, growing at a good clip. But, you know, we started this business, and I was working out of my dad's gin office, filling orders for sheets and having them picked up by UPS, USPS. And we've grown from there, but we've grown it by ourselves, you know, without any sort of outside capital. So we're just, kind of growing every year as
you
we
should
can.
Slowly. Right. I was thinking
responsibly.
That, I was thinking that sounded intoxicating working in a gin office.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, not that. Not near as fun as that.
Yeah, I thought we should clarify this is a cotton gin.
A cotton gin, yes.
Obviously, everything for me, if you haven't figured out, Anna, revolves around a critter that you can feed and eat. One marvel that I don't think people have a true appreciation for, because they go to their feed store. If you have cattle of any kind, some kind of a ruminant, you go to the feed store and people are buying cottonseed hulls or cottonseed. And it's like, you know, at one point in time, this was a product that nobody knew what to do with. Now it's a highly demanded, valuable feedstuffs. And how do you tap into that value yourself?
You know, we sell all of our cotton seed. It goes up to Wisconsin. It goes to dairy cattle to increase that butterfat content. And we keep some of ours, and we'll feed it to our cattle sometimes, mix it in with their feed in the winter. Sure. You know, they love to munch on it, get super excited about it.
For what you think winter is in Alabama.
Yes, you know, our super cold 50-degree
right, exactly.
Days we have. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's of pretty good value right now. I mean, all those feedstuffs like that have held their value pretty well.
You know, I know all of that is kind of down the way. It's all been sold. So I'm not real sure about how it's holding its value. I know that the cotton has suffered a pretty decent hit.
Right.
10 to 20 cents.
I don't even know what cotton. Tell us how it's valued. I'm so ignorant. I don't know how it's valued. Per pound?
Per pound. Yes. And, you know, it's all based in every bale that comes from our gin, a portion is taken to the classing office. They grade it on its fiber quality. So it's color, its staple length, its strength, its uniformity. And that's how the cotton is valued. So obviously you're looking for a long staple, bright whites, nice uniformity. So the fiber is all pretty much a certain length. And that's how you kind of get paid. And so we at Redland Cotton, we're able to take that classing information and we are able to hand pick the best bales to go into our product, which is really nice that we have that ginning capability to do that.
And Anna, I'm already at the point where I say we are halfway through our discussion. We will continue with Cotton 101 for a rancher who doesn't know any. I'm learning fast about cotton. We'll continue that discussion. Redland Cotton, more after this. Now let's talk about Certified Piedmontese, the opportunity to be a part of a branded beef program. It's quite simple. Lone Creek Cattle Company, they have the genetics. They have the marketing program. The only thing we don't have is you. We need commercial cattlemen to breed to these Piedmontese bulls to create more tender beef. The myostatin gene, made possible by Neogen, has told us that two copies of this myostatin gene means the most tender beef you could possibly have. So, get on board. At least check it out. Maybe it's not a good fit. You decide. Maybe you want to feed your calves all the way out. It's all up to you. Call Marlon Will. Ask him what the opportunities are and how you might fit in at www.lonecreekcattleco.com. Hashtag Certified Piedmontese. Welcome back to Rural Route. Trent Lewis alongside Anna Yeager joining us from Northwest Alabama. Clearly not in Mississippi.
Clearly not.
Clearly not.
You can tell by my accent.
But yeah, your accent sounds like you're Southwest Missouri. That's what happens when you send Alabama to New York.
That is, you get some sort of half-breed Missourian.
What did you learn by being in New York that you apply in your business every day now?
I assume you went there to be a great graphic designer, correct? A great graphic designer. I worked in advertising there, actually. And I think I learned to not be so easily offended and work at a quick pace. And I think those were the primary lessons. The culture up there is valuable in its work ethic and no nonsense. You know, I think, and you have been to the South, you've been to Alabama, you know, we tend to be a little bit, you know, slower and nicer, and those are all good things. But I think bringing a little bit of that New York sensibility is helpful as well.
I was going to say hustle and bustle. You call it sensibility.
Sensibility. That was a much more politically correct term, maybe.
Yeah. I think it's still hustle and bustle. What are the finished products that you produce at Redland Cotton?
Yeah, we started out making bed sheets. We had two lines of bed sheets, and now we're making bath towels. Hmm. We're making quilts. This year we're going to be introducing a blanket that's woven in Maine. So really we are trying to primarily focus on home goods right now. We did launch a line of loungewear, so it's kind of, in that garment, clothing aspect, but our main focus is on wide goods, bedding, bath towels, quilts, duvet covers, shams, that kind of stuff.
I think the everyday consumer would be shocked if they knew how many items they use, wear, are part of, sleep on, walk on, that actually contain cotton.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, the huge difference that they would experience if they're using a microfiber currently, mm-hmm. and if they switched to cotton, the huge difference that they would see in their product. You know, I think we...
Excuse me, Anna.
We look for certain things.
I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but when you say microfiber, are you talking about a petroleum-based product?
Yes. a synthetic, yes.
Like a polyester or something or another?
Like a polyester, yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure I'm picking up what you're laying down.
Yes, that is exactly what I'm laying down. Something that is, in fact, not natural. Mm-hmm. You know, just the way that cotton responds when treated well, and made into a good product is, you can by far tell the quality difference, I think.
Is this where I get a speech about cotton also breathes? So you'll be much more comfortable.
Cotton does breathe.
Yeah.
It's natural. Yes. You know, and it has a lot of really good, I mean, environmental benefits to it, too. If you bury your bed sheets, if you throw them away and they're 100% cotton, they're going to biodegrade and return back to dust. If you bury your polyester synthetic sheets, they're going to be there 100 years from now.
Well,
they're not going
there's
away.
A benefit to that, Anna, because if we would have like a pandemic and you couldn't afford new bed sheets from Redland Cotton, you could go dig up the ones you buried 30 years ago and they'd still be
there
good.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, if everybody wants to go and bury their microfiber sheets and wait for the next pandemic.
I think I should catch up with your terminology and call them microfibers. I think I'll get up to speed.
Microfiber. Yes.
And do you sell this via the internet, or are you in retail stores?
We are not in retail stores, thank goodness, right?
That's probably a good thing.
So all of our business is almost 100% online. We have a small retail store in our hometown. So if you were driving up 65, going from Birmingham back to Nebraska, you could have stopped off, made a 30-minute drop off the interstate and come to our store. But I would say 95% of our sales are online.
We will verified, guaranteed come make a drop off at your store if you do one little thing.
Yeah.
Buy a pig.
I can't promise I don't know if I can order a pig.
We can barter. I'm into bartering. If you trade me bed sheets
bartering.
For a pig, we'll get this done.
That would make for Instagram gold.
Is
the Redland Cotton pig. We'll talk about it.
Who else marketing cotton is using a pig as their lure, their gold standard? Is it pigs can't
right.
even tear it up? Anna, we're going to have something here by the time we're done.
I think so. I think we're on to something.
But I still kind of keep coming back to the same point, and I think I know the answer, and I'm somewhat redundant in bringing this up, but I got to believe that marketing it is the easiest part.
You know, I think in what it came down to for me is telling our story in a succinct, relatable way that made people feel like they were getting some knowledge about our farm and our process.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to be the most value that I could deliver, you know, because, and even within the Made in America aspect, there's a few options for people with brands making things here. But we're the only ones that's taking 100% cotton from our farm and going all the way with it. So when I kind of put together the supply chain and was able to lay it out visually, I think that is what really, really helps us communicate in our marketing well.
So I'm actually floating around your website as we speak, redlandcotton.com. And I'm going to let you in on a little secret. I don't buy much stuff for our house. I'm not the person who's buying stuff. So when these basic bed sheets that I see are priced at so-and-so, are they reasonable? They look reasonable. They don't look expensive.
They are reasonable for an American-made product. And they're reasonable in within the realm of higher-end bedding. But, I mean, if you were to go to even, we have Belk and I guess Macy's here, and you could find some bedding there for around this price point. It would probably be cheaper, and especially if you go to Target or Walmart and you compare those prices to these, it will look ridiculous. But, I mean, our basic sheets are just that. It's pretty much the basics. And that's truly the best price that we can put on them for our product. And we think that we're being very fair in our pricing.
I think that's the big unknown question as we do this on May 21st, 2020. Are we changing buying habits? You know, everybody right now, let's into my world again, Anna, is looking at the meatpacking plant situation. They're saying, oh, my goodness, we got this bottleneck. We might be limited on where we're going to get enough ground beef or whatever the case may be. And they're saying, I'm going to make sure I buy from my local farmers, and I don't care what it costs. I'm guessing that the same thought process is taking place, and you have people calling you every day saying, I want to buy this. I want to buy this from the Yeager family in Alabama because I don't want to rely on China anymore. 1 year from now, whatever the new normal is, will that thought process still carry through, or will we be in the economic situation where, like, I just can't afford to buy the best beef. I can't afford to buy that American cotton. How do you think that's all going to play out?
And for me, when you were talking about it, what came to my mind, especially for me when I'm in a grocery store setting, is labeling. And I get so frustrated by the lack of transparency, especially in my in the produce department, and our beef, and so I hope it continues to be a trend that people are conscious of it. But I think, and I wish that we could push for more transparent labeling, especially for things online. I know that I have bought things online, that I had to dig to find where it came from. And I think as long as people are able to get away with hiding where things come from, it's going to be harder for the consumer, even if they want to make an educated decision, it's going to be harder for them to do that.
I got a place that I want to pick it up, but I have to take a break.
Yeah.
So we will take that break. You'll gather your thoughts, and I want to pick up right where you left it off. Anna Yeager, my guest, Redland Cotton, on the web, redlandcotton.com. Check out those prices, and we'll be back with the final segment of Rural Route right after this. We continue to have individuals misguided about their fear over COVID. I'm telling you straight up, it's a virus. Viruses need to be managed. We need to protect those that are vulnerable, yes. But let's start entering the discussion. How did people become more immunological challenged? Some of them, I will agree, it's just genetics. For many of them, it is because they've been given bad dietary advice. They've been given permission to eat more carbs than protein and fat. Consequently, the body doesn't function so well. The Nutrition Coalition is working at fixing this and fixing our dietary guidelines. You can be a part of the solution. Arm yourself with facts. Go to nutritioncoalition.us today. Welcome back to Rural Route. Trent Luce alongside Anna Yeager coming to us northwest Alabama. Moulton, Alabama, to be exact, if you're looking for that retail store, Redland Cotton. So I use this argument because I'm not a fan of mandatory country of origin labeling with meat because, for the main reason, I can label mine. I don't believe in government mandates at any level. I want the government out of most business. I don't want more mandates. I want fewer mandates. Secondly, I can tell people this is born, bred, and raised in Sherman County, Nebraska, USA. It gives me a leg up in the marketplace. And they'll always say, yeah, but look, I can go buy my clothes, and every one of it says made in Taiwan, made in China. And I'll say, yeah, exactly. And all clothing is labeled made in whatever country, and only 3% of clothing purchased in the United States is made in the United States. So I'm wondering, isn't price seems to be the driver. What difference does it make? That's a question.
Yes, I do think that price is a driver for a good percentage of the population. But I do think it's part of consumer habits, too, about what we value and how we allocate those our funds, whatever they are. And I get a lot of feedback about, you know, this is why Americans can't buy American-made goods. Because your prices are just ridiculous. You know, can your employees buy these sheets? The answer is yes, they can buy those sheets because we do pay them a fair wage for working. But I think it just comes down to what you value. Like if you don't value the American-made jobs or the American-made textiles, if that is not important to you, then that's not how you're going to spend your money. But, I mean, I have personally been irritated over the past 2 months with, I mean, my own dollars that I've been trying to spend on, I mean, even just American aside, anything other than China, and just trying to find, as I shop online, because I'm not going into retail stores other than like small shops. And that information is just not out there online. Like, yes, it's true. When you get the product in, it is all labeled. It has to. But I do think from an online perspective, it's really frustrating and can get a little hazy.
I wanted to bring it up again, Anna, because I want to tie it back into a previous conversation, is that I do believe that we have a reset, and I believe that the reset is that people spending money care now who's getting their money, and we know that it will change. It was 9/11 all over for a few days. It was kumbaya, let's help my neighbor, and then, you know, six months later, it's like, oh, I'm going to go over there and shoot that somebody, you know. But I think it's up to you and I and everybody else that's in the business of producing goods that people pay for to keep this on the top of their mind. If we allow them to forget about the mentality that they have right now, it's on us. If they lapse back into, these are the people that drive me nuts. You go to Walmart, and I don't ever name them, but I'm going to here, because people go to Walmart because they can buy stuff cheaper. If you go shop at Walmart, you cannot, in good faith, go to your boss, wherever you work, and say, I want more money. Because what you're doing by shopping at Walmart is you're taking less money out of the system. You're putting the crunch on everybody in that supply chain. You're putting the emphasis on the clothing that is made in China or Taiwan, wherever it's made, and however they make it. So you can't go to your boss and ask for more money because you're sending your money somewhere else. And people don't connect the dots in that way. And it's up to you and I, and we'll do that on our website. You do it on your website and try to find a better way to bring all, because I guarantee you, I know for a fact, I don't know anything about buying bed sheets, but I'll bet you I can buy your bed sheets and they'll last three times longer than I'm going to buy that cheap bed sheet somewhere else. True or false?
Yes. True. And that's a good mentality to drive home. But I think some people, and I think it's an American culture, and you see it in generations that are younger, having no savings, no nothing. Everybody's living for paycheck to paycheck in the moment. It seems like nobody's really investing. And whether that's investing in their health or the well-being of their country by buying American and making that a focus, or whether they're, you know, investing in their bedding that's going to last longer. I think it is a mind shift, and it goes beyond just made in America, putting the stick to China. It goes beyond that.
And I've changed my mind.
Yes.
I'm going to come see you and your daddy without bringing you a pig.
Oh, man.
Please bring the pig. I just want to be a part of this. I mean, we need a new renaissance, and it's ironic that the renaissance that is in history that most people don't know about was a result of the Black Death Plague that killed half the population. And it caused a renaissance. We need a renaissance, and we need to be the drivers in keeping these things first and foremost on the minds of American consumers. Because while you were talking about, yes, people were living paycheck to paycheck. They were. But they spend 9% of their disposable paycheck on food and 16% on entertainment. Okay, so you're not really living paycheck to paycheck if you're spending nearly twice as much on your entertainment as you are your food.
It's just what you prioritize and value more.
Yeah. 5 minutes. Yeah. I just want you to keep track of where we're at. You obviously are glad you're back home. You got out of the hustle and bustle of New York City. Where do you see this thing going? What do you want to change in the big picture to take this to the new level? Because I know you can't make it selling 10% of your cotton crop through this system. You got to be 30, 40, 50%. What are we going to do to make that happen?
For sure. And, you know, as we speak right now, we are, and if you come and visit us at our farm, we're building a very large cut and sew and distribution center that's right across from our cotton gin. We hope that can be a building that we can really grow in, and also be an opportunity for people to come in and literally across the street see the field, see the cotton gin, and then they can see the final process of where we're cutting and sewing this woven fiber that was literally grown right here. And, you know, I'm happy that, and the way that I quantify success is how many jobs have I created here? And we've been able to add probably 15 jobs in our small rural, ag town. And that's huge to me. And the fact that I get to come on a platform like yours and even have this conversation is a reason enough to have my business. So that's where I see the value, and that's where I hope I can continue to grow and expand on it, is not only to produce a good product here, but also have it be an educational talking point. Even around the price, let's talk about the price and why it is the way that it is.
And let's face it, the one thing we've all learned with March, April, May 2020 is that you can have three people in your cut and sew shop. You can video that, put it on YouTube, whatever your choice of social media, and just expand your reach exponentially. Or you could do it live right on, you know, one of those platforms, there is no limit to what we can accomplish. I mean, look at the school system. You used to think you had to have kids in brick and mortar to teach them.
Yeah.
Your website?
It's a new world.
It is a new world. Are you going to be shaping it or?
Who
are just
sure.
Sitting there on lockdown? That's the question of the day. All right. I got 2 minutes. Where do you want people to most know here in the last 2 minutes?
Well, we are most definitely not on lockdown. And, I hope people will go and check out the resources that we have on our website, take a look at our products, follow us on Instagram and Facebook. We post a lot of good content on there. I hope people will give us a look and see what we're doing and kind of educate themselves on the process of manufacturing a fiber from start to finish here in the U.S.
Anna, you must be younger than myself because every time you mention a social media platform, you bring up Instagram first.
It's my personal favorite. But I understand Facebook is still a very big player.
Are there going to be more people going back to knitting and such?
Knitting, like...
buying yarn and making more of their own clothing?
I don't think so.
I heard earlier today that online recipes and cooking at home has increased by 284% since March 1st. So you don't see that happening in the...
I don't see it happening in the long term.
I don't either.
I don't. I mean, as you said, you can be locked down and stay that way, or you can continue to go out and do. And I think the majority of Americans, we want to continue to go out and do. And while I've enjoyed some of my home cooking, I'm ready to get back out there and eat somebody else's cooked food.
I think you and 320 million other Americans are at that point.
Yes.
And it's been fantastic. Thanks for joining me. And whether you order a pig or not, next time I'm in Alabama, I'm coming to that retail. I'm going to come to the cut shop. Teach me how to cut.
Please do.
All right.
I will.
We have successfully journeyed down the... Of course, if your dad wants a pig, we'll do that too. We've successfully journeyed down the road, connecting rural and urban America. My thanks to Anna, both Anna and myself, remind you that all roads do lead to a rural route. Once again, reminding you that it's not about measuring performance anymore in the food business. It's about predicting genetics thanks to the genomic awareness that we may have. Neogen has provided the opportunity for us to look inside, for example, these Piedmontese cattle and see that they possess two copies of a gene, the myostatin gene, which is responsible for tenderness. The myostatin gene responsible for tenderness happens to also be the most important part of eating satisfaction. Tender beef, that's what matters most to consumers. We need you to be a part of this supply chain. Go to LoneCreekCattleCo.com for details.